What the fuck is a reboot?
Hello, welcome back to Clerks Minute Reboot, the show where you're looking back at the Kevin Smith movie, James Gallagher reboot, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Blake.
I'm Kyle. I'm a representative of Saban Films.
And on the line as our special guest from the Rocketeer Minute and Apollo 13 Minute and currently Silverado Minute, Jim O'Kane. Jim, welcome back.
You're out of order, and you're out of order, and we're all out of order.
The candy machine by the men's room is out of order.
Well, Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. I have many feelings when I think about this film, and some are positive, some are negative, some are in between, and I sometimes just don't know what to feel. But this is definitely a fun one to talk about.
Well, let's start there. Like, what? I don't even care. Is this the first time you've seen the movie? Did you see the movie when it first came out? Like, what's your thing with this film?
To me, it went straight to video for me. I saw it on Amazon Prime, and I just rewatched it on Amazon Prime, and my thoughts haven't changed. There's this thing about. I mean, I enjoy the View Askew universe. I really do, but it feels like. Beyond beating a dead horse, this is like beating a dead horse without a budget, and I feel like, you know, watching it, it's like the references that I have are all from people my age. So it's like there was a comedian named Toady Fields, and she used to do the talk show circuit all the time. She was on the Merv Griffin Show, she was on the Tonight Show, she was on the Mike Douglas Show, and she was funny. She was a very funny lady, and she had a lot of medical issues, and some of her medical issues, and she used to dance too, and she'd be dancing and performing and all these other things, and she needed money because her career was fading, and she had unfortunately had to get her legs amputated because of circulation problems. And but she needed money, and her friends like Mike Douglas and Merv Griffin used to like wheel her out on stage to have a chat or have her give her comedy review. And you'd see a woman in a wheelchair with no legs doing the same jokes that she had been doing 30 years before. And it was like, while you really liked Toady Fields, it's like, this is getting a little bit pathetic. And I feel that way sometimes when I'm watching Kevin Smith movies. It's like, this is the thing that seems to make him money, but it's like he's kind of winnowing down to this is all he can do. And it's funny, but it's very sad. That's my overall opinion of the movie.
No, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. I know I've heard the term fan film. Like Kevin Smith pretty much made a fan film for himself. On the movie and made a fan film.
I can see that. And Kevin Smith has made me laugh a lot in the past, and I enjoy, and this film, there's some parts in it that really made me laugh, but overall it's just, I get very queasy watching this movie because it's like, oh, these were things that were cool when they were in their 20s and 30s, but now as they're, you know, they're coming up on the senior page of the IHOP. It's like, aren't you a little bit old for this kind of stuff? Can't you get a little bit further on in your career and find something else? Novel, and that was the overall feeling I was getting through this film.
I look at Kyle, I think he has something to say, but go ahead.
Oh,
no, okay, that's fine. I thought you were gonna say something. No, I get it. I mean, I also keep in mind that this is almost feels like a spoof of a reboot, like you're spoofing reboots.
And keeping in mind that
Kevin does hold the podcast called James L. Bob Get Old.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't make sense. Like, I get it.
I appreciate Kevin Smith's humor. I really do. It's great. He's a, you know, like me, I'm a Jersey guy too. And I appreciate many of the things that he points out in this film. But I just keep wondering, is the audience that he's going for is aging with him. So he's hitting people that are now in their 40s and 50s and even 60s. And, it's like the jokes where he's saying, like the joke that's in this minute with the "you're out of order, you're out of order." That's from a 1979 Al Pacino movie. And I get it. I saw the movie, used to watch it a million times on HBO, but it's kind of like nowadays when you play, if you have a trailer to a movie and they're doing some kind of a comedy thing, and then you hear a record scratch, you hear that rip sound. Kids today don't know where that sound comes from. That just means everything should stop and somebody's amiss, but they don't understand that's a record needle skipping across a record. And it feels like when you're saying that "you're out of order" thing, that that phrase, that catchphrase there, people don't know where, you know, what movie it's from or what the context was. It's just that's something that you say when you hear the "out of order."
It's funny because that I actually, when I was taking my notes, this, I'm like, I know it's Al Pacino, but I don't remember what movie it's from.
Good. And Justice for All.
Oh, I know that now. Yeah. I know that. But like, my point is, like, I understand what Jim's saying. Yeah. Like, I know the line. I know who says it. Yeah. But before I took my notes, I'm like, what movie is that from? Like, I can see the scene. Like, they spoofed it when WWE was doing movie trailers before WrestleMania 21. Mm-hmm. They spoofed it during that. Keep in mind, that was 15 years ago. Yeah, when that happened. So
when it was old at the time, you know.
Yeah, that was 15 years ago.
Yeah. And this is from a 40 plus year old movie. So it's, I mean, his reference points, he tries to be topical on things, but these are things that are reference points for people in their 50s. And it's like, oh gosh, that's it's like when you watch, you know, I remember when I was a kid, we used to watch Bugs Bunny movies, and they have different cartoon characters doing versions of Betty Davis and Peter Lorre and stuff like that. And when you were a kid, you didn't know who Betty Davis was, but you knew, oh, that's that character that they always do on a Warner Brothers cartoon. And you know, it had no relation to what you had personally experienced. So I keep thinking nobody knows, you know, for Justice at All, that he's yelling at Jack Warden and or what that movie was about. And it was funny. I was watching this, as I always do. I make my wife sit down and watch movies with me. when I have to be on a show, I said, no, we're going to watch the reboot again. And she was and I know this is not in my minutes, but they're going to start talking about the difference between remakes and reboots.
Yes.
And my wife pointed out nobody has remade an Al Pacino movie. You don't see a remake of Dog Day Afternoon. You don't see a remake of The Godfather.
Give them time.
Yeah. I mean, but that's, you know, it'll happen. They'll find, you know, Robert Pattinson will suddenly be doing Scent of a Woman or something. And it's like, I don't think you could remake an Al Pacino movie because you'd need Al Pacino to do it. And when he says you're out of order and you're out of order, you feel, even though that movie, I mean, the plot of Injustice for All was really ridiculous with Jack Warden shooting a gun in the courtroom to maintain order. That was the 70s, and you could make crazy movies like that. Nowadays, there's just, all we're seeing is rehashes and reboots and renovations of existing material. So it's intriguing to think about that this is where we're at.
So here's something that would be scary. The Twitter-approved remake of Blazing Saddles.
Oh, my God. That would never work. There is no way that worked for 2030. That would barely work.
Yeah, a four-minute short. Some of their, yeah.
See, that's something Robot Chicken would do.
I was going to say, that's the joke.
Like, that's Robot Chicken material right there. Or like, or Funny or Die. That's a Funny or Die sketch. That's not a movie anymore in 2022.
The only thing, it would have to have like a pro-social commentary. The only thing I could think that they would do is they would reshape it as something that you'd play before a movie, like when they tell you to, you know, turn off your cell phone and don't ruin the movie for other people. That would be the context. They'd do a reboot of
I don't think it would be subtle social commentary. It'd be basically Anvilicious, like the new Candyman or Black Christmas 2019. Where the movie basically beats you over the head with it, like a kid going after a pinata.
Yeah.
Well, we're dancing around. We're in the court scene. We're back on the court scene. We ended last episode in the court scene. So here we are. We are now introduced to more people. And I'm not going to go through them in IMDb. As I said, if they're in other Jay and Silent Bob Viewers Universe movies before this, I'll bring it up. But all the people, I think, are friends with Kevin and why they're in this movie. That's what happened here. But the bailiff is Joe Magliano. The prosecutor is Frankie Shaw. And of course, Honorable Jerry and Executioner, which might be my favorite freaking name of the entire movie. Craig Robinson, who these two are amazing together. Like, this is hysterical, like, little comedy scene going on here in the courtroom that makes no sense. It should not work, but it's also good.
I should say, I could think of a cooler name for a judge. Idiocracy, Judge Maxwell the Hammer BMW.
Perfect. Yes. One of the note, by the way, is docket number 37. I'm literally the name of Kyle. Docket number 37.
In a row?
Thank you. the people, the JSL. I love the fact that they make fun of the V in this entire movie. And they make fun of that all the time because how stupid that is.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Stupid and pretentious.
Yes. Back to what we were talking about last episode, that JSL and I are back in court.
Yeah.
we were joking about that last episode. Like, if this is the first time they've been caught on marijuana charges, how are they in court now?
Yeah.
So it's pretty funny how the judge knows them by name.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it must be a day ending in Y, and yet this is apparently the SWAT team basically getting excited because they can finally arrest them.
For this charge.
Yeah.
I guess the last episode, I think it's for this charge. Yeah. And this is the big charge. They got it for small things, but they were on the big charge.
Yeah, the last time they got brought in because they put squirrels down their pants for the purposes of gambling.
I don't know, I sit there for the laugh. I feel like I have to play the background squirrels on pants of Phineas and Ferb right now. Do that right now. Nothing to do with the movie, just because of the joke.
I was trying to figure out now. You know, the problem sometimes with the Jane Silent Bob movies is they tend to be, even though they're, you know, they're mostly relevant to their time, they try not to be topical. They don't stick with topicalities or make a joke about a specific thing happening in an instance in time. But you may have covered this in the last minute. But this whole idea of having a chicken store that's a drug front, they're capitalizing on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and stuff.
Well, I actually didn't tie that in. You're right. I forgot about that tie-in. That's a good point. Actually, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a chicken store, and they're, you know, there's a, and I keep thinking that, you know, Justin Long in this case is their, well, he's supposed to be their Saul Goodman, but he's not, and he's, you know, they're doing this. I'm trying to figure out where Justin Long was trying to go. He's doing Harvey Fierstein voice, and I don't know, you know, where he was trying to go with it, other than this is something that Kevin Smith thought up at the time. Is you're Saul Goodman, but you're playing Harvey Fierstein.
As I pointed out last episode, it sounds less like that and more like he's doing White Goodman from Dodgeball.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's a good point, actually. Yeah.
I half expect him to start introducing the Globo Gym Cobras.
Yeah, Blaze. Laser, blazer.
I do like the fact that they're making jokes about the fact that, like, I guess the weed grew itself. Like, really? Okay, cool. That's what we're doing.
Ooh, sounds like the plot for a marijuana-based Day of the Triffids.
So I love the fact that their lawyer, their quote-unquote lawyer, as we talked about last episode, and we'll get to it in a minute because of how ridiculous this really is. Gordon says, this is not, it was not, it was merely a pop-up shop for Saban films, which is hysterical to me. And they're making fun of the film company that made this movie. They do that in the entire film.
Not to mention the fact that we actually been to a pop-up shop based off of this.
Yes, I'm wearing a t-shirt for the pop-up shop that we went to for movies. We went to. So it's actually the graphic I used for our first episode. Yeah. If you look at our first episode, the picture we have, because it was just me and him hosting together, it's our first episode, and it was a picture from that pop-up shop at movies.
So Kevin Smith is becoming Baskin Robbins. They always find out.
And I love how Jay, as dumb as he is, as dumb as Jay can be, even he caught on to, oh, he's helping get us off. Never mind, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go with the flow.
Not the first time somebody's helped them get off.
Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum.
Well, let's see. Need we mention something that comes up later? Hulu and Hump?
That's actually the episode. We're talking about that with Tom Staub next week. Yeah. But for this one, I like the fact that he convinces our favorite little judge here that they're not guilty, but he's like, they're not innocent. They are JSL yeah. Bob still. They're not innocent people, yeah. but they're not guilty of the charges we have right now. I remember in the theater, we're watching this movie because we can see it in the theater. We talked about this last week. That we're watching this in the theater, and we knew the plot. We know the plot going in. Everyone knows what the plot is. And it's gonna be the same plot as the first time around. But when he jumped over to the other side of the court, our entire theater was like, wait, what? We reacted the same way. Like, what just happened? Oh my god. I love this plot twist because it got us to the point where we needed to do, but it's a surprise. Like, it was a big surprise.
And no time for them to get another attorney. It's like, oh, well, this is, all of a sudden it's a civil case.
out of nowhere. I also like the fact that this is my second case. I need a fucking drink. Like, come on, dude, you literally walked over 5 feet. Come on. And I love the joke that he said they have a lot of cases to get through. I feel like I've been in courtrooms like this, that the judge is trying to move on with things and nobody's here, but he's trying to move on with the cases. I've been in courtrooms like this.
Seems less like they're in a courtroom, more like they're in the DMV.
Except they're moving a lot faster than the DMV.
The sloths must have head off today.
Is there any, I was trying to figure out the woman that was in the deep background just to show that there was like nobody there, the equivalent of crickets. There was a woman in the back. Was she anybody? I couldn't find her on IMDb. I didn't know if there was.
The good thing about Amazon Prime, obviously, we do have the x-ray on it. X-ray, and I'm trying to see if anything pops up. And I don't see anything. It might just be like one of Harley's friends that just happened to be on set and just threw her back there. That sounds like something Kevin would do.
A random homeless person that wandered by.
Oh, yeah, well, I could see them, like, hey, Harley, one of your friends, and they just sit in the back just for, like, the scene, just for them to have somebody back here. We'll pay him something. They don't have to say anything. Just hang out back there for us. You can be on your phone for all I care. Just hang out back here.
it reminded me of the, when you go all the way back to Clerks, that it's an interior scene that you don't need daylight for. And even though they were in this very dark room with there were like stained glass windows in that courtroom, frosted glass. It's perfect that they probably took over a courtroom somewhere in Red Bank and shined lights against the side of a building so they could film it 2 a.m. and get the whole scene done while nobody's using the
property. I will correct you on one thing. This whole movie was filmed in New Orleans. The entire movie was filmed. Okay. Yeah. So there you go. Even if they did it, it would be in New Orleans. So
somewhere in some parish, outside of New Orleans, they did a night filming it.
It does look like a church. It does look like a church. I can't even say that. I'm looking at the background. It looks like pews. It doesn't even look like a courtroom.
It's like they might have found some kind of Methodist church that had a good front stage, and they just put in a courtroom front, and then off they went and brought a Jersey flag with them.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it, and it does look like pews. Although I'm looking at a freeze frame looking behind Jay, it looks like pews. It's actually really weird that you put that out. I'm looking at it more detail like that.
So it's like, I mean, they're probably doing locations, location scouting. Said, yeah, this could be a courtroom. Let's use this. Here's, we'll donate to your parish, and off we go.
I was just to say, great. Now I've got this picture of Craig Robinson as a preacher.
just change the outfit.
No, just add a collar.
Look at Channel Father David Maury, see if he has an opinion on this. For those wondering, because he's never been on this show, so I have to clarify, Father David Maury is the MMX clergyman. So I just want to throw that out there. He is our personal MMX clergyman.
Our official chaplain.
Yep, there you go. Yeah. Perfect. But I just want to close it out to people that don't know what we're talking about.
He's the Father Mulcahy to our 4077.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was on D5, but he was never on this show. So I just wanted to clarify that. So this is where we have the whole spiel that Saban Films has licensed Jay and Silent Bob, the characters of Silent Bob, that they just signed these contracts that we talked about in the last episode. Silent Bob tried to stop them from signing. And we find out Saban Films is making another movie of stupid Blunt Man and Chronic. It's so stupid. By the way, real fast, before I even get to that, they reference the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Because it's Saban Films, you have to bring it up. You have to make a Power Rangers joke. And they're talking about when the Red Ranger turned into the Gold Ranger. And I'm like, I know I've seen something. Okay, this is a reference point. one summer, my son discovered Power Rangers on Netflix and binge watched every single solitary episode to date at that time, all 25 years of that show in one summer. This binge watch every single season. So I've seen every episode at least twice. So I knew exactly what he was talking about, but I couldn't remember the episode. Yeah. So the episode they're referencing, where the Ranger turns into the Gold Ranger, is Power Rangers Zeo. Episode 36, it's called A Gold Homecoming. Golden Homecoming is the end of the 7-episode Golden Ranger arc. That's a great story, Power Rangers Zeo, which does have a fantastic theme song. I'm going to say, the Power Rangers Zeo theme song, is a fantastic theme song? I think it's like the second series after the original Power Rangers. Like, they went Power Rangers, then they went Zeo. So I still was watching at that age. When I was actually when the show was on, I was still watching at this point.
It came after Alien Rangers?
Well, it was the original show, and then Alien Rangers was part of the original show. And then they ended that show into Zeo. Because they blew up the command center and everything else. Like,
it's like every season just has one massive downer ending.
Well, the whole series, the whole Power Rangers arc ends with them killing off Zordon. Like, the entire arc ends with that.
Yeah.
Like, 20 years of the show has ended with them killing Zordon. Like, so, that's what I'm done with my Power Rangers geekdom. I just bring that up.
And for an encore, my nephew also did also binge watched all of VR Troopers and Big Bad Beetleborgs.
I think that was the same summer. But I remember the Power Rangers because I remember sitting with him. I was like, Time Force Power Rangers? How did I know this existed? It was such a random one, but I remember the last at the end of I forgot what one it was, but they did they brought back every Power Ranger series and made it a big crossover. Where they had everybody come back. It was one of the craziest things I've ever seen on television. Before the MCU did their thing, Power Rangers did it first.
Yeah, Power Rangers Endgame.
It was pretty much like Endgame before the MCU.
You have Tommy lifting up Thor's hammer.
Oh yeah, yeah. I will say to this day that I've never gotten chills in my life in a movie theater than when Captain America raises up Thor's hammer. It's one of my favorite moments in movie history. Any chills in the theater. So anyway, let's get back to this movie because this is not Endgame. Even though we do have Avenger references later in the film, we'll get to them later in the film.
I did notice that they had the another reference to Clerks with. How much they paid for the rights, $3,700. From Craigslist, yeah.
It's even more ridiculous. It's not as bad as they paid $3,700. It's not Craigslist.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. Somebody actually offered the film rights to Hercules in New York along with a print of the film on eBay.
What? Really?
Yeah.
How much did that go for?
I have to look that one up. I'm not sure, but yeah, it was it was the very first movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger ever did.
Oh, that makes sense. But on eBay?
On eBay.
Wow, I did not know that would happen. That's crazy. So that's not that far-fetched.
Yeah.
But I do love the fact that they say they overpaid.
Yeah.
And everybody, there were no disagreements. That was funny. They all, yep, that's right.
Yeah, I like the fact that Kevin does make fun of his movies. In this movie. Yeah. Like, he makes fun of all his movies somewhere in here.
So judging by this, the original Blunt Man and Chronic movie is the Fantastic Four 2015 of the ViewAskewverse.
Well, technically, is it in the ViewAskewverse, though? Technically, if they branch out of the ViewAskewverse, it's even weirder. Which is even more bizarre. Yeah. Like, we're talking about a movie in a movie. From an earlier movie.
Based off of a comic created in an earlier movie.
Exactly. It's such a weird meta thing we're talking about here. It's so meta. Oh, yeah. So the whole thing is they apparently signed away their name because they said that Saban owns not only the secret identities, but not only the Bowman comic, but they're supporting secret identities, Jay and Silent Bob, which are now registered trademarks, apparently, according to Haber. They just signed.
Screw you! What? Screw you! Trademark office.
I feel like Kevin wrote this scene after dealing with the Weinstein Company trying to get back the rights to Dogma.
Yeah,
what happened here? Because technically, Kevin still does not have the rights to Dogma. He doesn't have the rights to that movie. Technically, does it. If you're a Kevin Smith Club member, there's ways to sing it. But technically, he doesn't own the rights to it.
I think he was also referencing This goes way back, but back in 1984, Clayton Moore, the guy that was the original Lone Ranger, he played Lone Ranger on radio and then on TV and in a couple of movies. He used to make personal appearances all the time as the Lone Ranger. He'd wear the mask and have the hat, and he'd show up on a horse and things like that. And then in 1984, I can't remember the production company, but the star of the movie, they made a remake of The Lone Ranger, starring a guy named Clinton Spilsbury.
Ah, I know this. And it was 1981, and was The Legend of the Lone Ranger.
Legend of the Lone Ranger. And they put a cease and desist order to Clayton Moore to tell him he was no longer allowed to not only declare himself as the Lone Ranger, but he couldn't wear any of the costumes or accoutrements of the Lone Ranger. So rather than take this lying down, because the Lone Ranger does not back down, he made a deal with Corning, the Corning Glass Company, who were making a line of eyeglasses that would change color in sunlight. That they turned into sunglasses, and he wore these rather large, oversized, mask-shaped sunglasses to all events, and he introduced himself as Clayton Moore. And there was enough bad publicity coming out of this that the production company backed off, telling him that he couldn't wear the mask anymore because people weren't going to see the Legend of the Lone Ranger movie.
Wow.
But
and Clayton Moore got the last laugh because the movie bombed.
Yeah, exactly. So they really bit off more than they can chew. You don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger, as Jim Croce would say.
It sounds like in the wrestling world, when like wrestlers leave WWE and they can't use the name that they're known for, so then they change the letters in their name just so they can advertise it. Like, I'll use someone like Enzo Amore, who left WWE, and now he's referred to as Enzo. N-I-Z-O. Because if you can get away with that spelling, it's still the same name. But it's a different spelling. The same mentality. It's the same mentality, really. Or when the Dudley Boys changed their names to Team 3D because that was their finishing move. But everyone knew who they were, but they couldn't use the Dudley Boys because WWE owned it. Like, it was the same thing.
Yeah, it's like they could have easily turned Clayton Moore into the best spokesperson for their movie if they had just, you know, let him go out and say, here's the next generation of the Lone Ranger, and hired him and let him be that guy. But no. When you start bringing lawyers into it, it's like, oh, that was a mistake.
Yeah, that's bad. So back to them making fun of the original movie, by the way. Back to Blow Man and Chronic, also making fun of Jay and Silent Bob. Straight back. They're just openly making fun of it now. So I like the fact that the movie sucks and blows balls. Like, it just sucks. And I like the fact that he tried to object it, and the judge is like, no, I'll allow it. That movie did suck balls, that asshole. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. That's something you normally hear in a courtroom. No, not normally thing to hear.
I never thought I'd ever need to hear Craig Robinson say that.
Yeah, it's just a weird sentence to be said in a courtroom.
Yeah.
So this is where we pretty much get our plot that they are legally prohibited to call themselves Jay and Silent Bob ever again. Sure. That's something that would happen illegal. That would happen really. That would really happen.
Jay could easily get around it by calling himself the letter J.
Or just say Jason. It also works. It also works. There could be Jason and Robert until they figure this out.
Or as the cartoon would put it, Senator Robert Plutarski.
There you go. Perfect. Perfect. So then we get to what we were talking about at the beginning with the you're out of order. This whole fucking courtroom's out of order, which I guarantee JB's just wanted to do once. And they let him do it. He wanted to do that. I know for a fact he's a huge Law and Order person. Like, he loves the show Law and Order. The real Jay Mears, the real guy. He loved Law and Order. So I guarantee Kevin's like, you want to do this line from Al Pacino just for fun?
Because I'm guessing not only Law and Order, but also just legal thrillers.
It's just fun. This is right up in Jay Mears' alley. Yeah. So this is perfect for him. For him to do this line.
Yeah.
And then I like the fact that it makes fun of the fact that he says somebody wants an Oscar. Which in a way is them making fun of the Oscars, but also Kevin slamming them for him trying to get an Oscar for Tusk and them ignoring him.
Well, of course, it's a horror film, and
pre-Get Out horror film.
Well, I was going to say, well, it's a horror film, and don't we know that horror films are the lowest form unless they try to educate and enlighten us, like Get Out, which was totally the reason they picked it, and not, you know, the whole Oscar's so white thing. So don't get me wrong, it's a great movie. I just get the feeling that's the only reason that they picked it for the Oscars, because they would normally not do a horror movie. I mean, if they were considered doing horror movies, Jeff Goldblum would have won an Oscar for The Fly.
Fair enough.
Also, because Pacino in Justice for All, he was actually nominated for Best Actor that year for that role, which was nuts. I mean, it was really not that good a movie, and he was just asked, you know, they asked Pacino to be Pacino, turn Pacino up to 11 and do your best Pacino. So
it was still a better movie for him to be in than say Jack and Jill.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Oh, geez. All right. So we jump to the mall. Okay. So we have a couple issues with this mall. First of all, yeah. we're supposed to be in New Jersey, right? We're supposed to be in Jersey, but this mall, it's the Escalade. Here's the thing. This mall, if you look it up, is in Louisiana. It's literally in Louisiana. We're in Kenner, Louisiana. By the way, mall currently, as of this recording, it's closed due to Hurricane Ida.
Yeah.
It is still closed.
Yeah.
And I went to the website. I figured it was closed due to COVID. No, it's closed because of Hurricane Ida. Usually the COVID is the reason they're closed, but no, not right now.
Fuck! Holy shit! There was a hurricane?
Why are you yelling at? Why'd you yell that?
I have no idea.
So, Jason and Bob show up to the mall that's not in Jersey. as the song "Social" by Squirt Gun plays in the background.
They somehow managed to take a shortcut from Jersey to Louisiana and then get back.
Yeah, like no one's gonna notice this if you're not looking it up.
Every mall looks like every other mall. You go to a mall like this, and it could easily be in Oregon or South Dakota. You're gonna see the same eight stores you see everywhere else.
At a certain point, though, shouldn't you have just got to pick up at the Garden State Plaza in New Jersey or something like that, just to make the joke work? Or Paramus Park Mall or like Woodridge, like something. Like there's like four or five malls in Jersey you could just get a pickup from in front of. You didn't even need a permit probably for it.
Probably done that. That would have broke the budget.
Hey. So, real fast, the song we're hearing is "Social" by Squirt Guns from the Mall Rat soundtrack. Just want to throw that out there. Another reference point to the past. But of course, we are referencing Mallrats because we're going back to the secret stash.
It says,
"Don't open, dead inside." I don't know what that referencing to, but there you go. We are now at the secret stash versus at the mall. I like the fact that I was talking about this next episode, but I like the fact that Secret Stash is in the mall. Like, it makes no sense why it would be in a mall, but I like the fact that it is. I like the fact that it's kind of like the Spencer's or like Hot Topic or like Box Lunch of this universe.
It constantly loses its novelty every year.
Well, that's Spencer's, but like Box Lunch is open now. I really like that place. I really like that place.
Sorry, well, then Hot Topic too. But
yeah, Hot Topic. I haven't been in Hot Topic in a decade. Hot Topic's not long.
And it could also be like, I mean, as you go into the mall, as malls start their decline before they turn into the dirt malls of mall rats, eventually you start seeing like karate schools and Liberty Tax and these other, and it may be that seeing a comic book store opening up in a mall is a sign of the mall's decline. So that might, that's another subtlety that they might be sliding in there.
It's a sign of the mall apocalypse.
Yeah.
There you go. So I do like the fact that we're here though. And by the way, of course, the secret stash, on my background of people on the Zoom call, it's actually the real secret stash in New Jersey. I visited it a few years back. This is actually not the secret stash in my graphic. Is not the Afro stash. Now they moved like three blocks over into a bigger location. They actually moved to a bigger location now. This is crazy now, looking back at the fact that we're doing this. But this is not the secret stash we know that is run by Walt Flanagan. This is Brody's secret stash, run by one only then Brody Bruce from Mallrats, played by, again, by Jason Lee. Before we get to that, Kevin promised everybody one last Stan Lee cameo. But of course, Stan Lee had passed away by this point. By the time they filmed this, he had passed away. So he did a Stan Lee tribute.
Yeah.
Which I respect this move. Like, this is really cool. especially after Captain Marvel, where Stanley shouted out Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
So it was a Mallrats. Was that Mallrats? Yeah. Yeah, it was Mallrats.
He, he was reading the screenplay for Mallrats.
It all ties together in a weird, bizarre way. So, and I do love the appearance by the pop-out appearance by Jason Lee Brody. Here, it just pops out like it's a fucking cartoon character. It pops out from behind the frame.
He pops out from behind the Stan Lee shrine.
Yeah, I love the fact he just pops up like a cartoon character now. Schnugans just comes out there.
Well, considering he played a cartoon character for 5 movies.
True. Very true. I'm going to say, though, his appearance is it's fantastic. It's so funny. So, Oakfast, they talk about how this place is on its last legs. And it's understandable. We just talked about the dying malls and everything else. Well, this is also a shout out to the actual Secret Stash, where they actually did a 4-part a podcast about this on Smodcast and Tom Steve Dave, where they reopened the new stash. They opened the new stash. And they talked about how Comic Book Men, the show Comic Book Men, actually saved the Secret Stash. If that show didn't happen, the Secret Stash would not be open to this day. There's no way they could have financially kept the stash open.
I found it interesting. If you go to Cameo, the place where you can hire celebrities to send birthday gifts, birthday greetings and things, and some of the more famous people that are, like you can get Ralph Fiennes to do something, but he's doing it for his favorite charity. They have different big stars that you can hire for $500 and get a charity. But if you look up Kevin Smith, his favorite charity is all proceeds go to opening Secret Stash. And
that's funny. That's actually pretty funny. Because I know that was leading to the opening of the stash. So, reopening of the new stash. That is funny. I'm actually looking at it real fast. Yeah. And that is that. He's not taking any requests at the moment, though, as of this recording.
No,
he's too busy.
If you watch his video, he said that all proceeds will go to the reopening of the Secret Stash.
That's funny. I didn't know that. That's pretty funny.
Everybody's got a favorite charity. That's his.
Hey, you know what? It works, though, but it does work. Out of curiosity, what is James Hughes charging on Cameo? Jamie's currently on Cameo, $150 per cameo.
Yeah, you can have him do the opening of the show
every week. Yeah, or he just wait till we get to what's the date of this episode? I can just wait till we get to Fan Expo Comic Con and then ask him there to do it there. That's we're gonna be at Fan Expo Chicago, and Kevin Smith and Jamie Hughes and the clerk thing will be there.
And if we don't, I can always split.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. I'm not worried about that right now because We're press members, so hopefully we can just talk to them and we'll figure something else out. My recorder is always in my pocket when I'm doing something like that. Yeah. So, at all times, I have a recorder in my pocket when we're at cons. I met Rob Paulsen here in Wisconsin for a con, and I had my recorder in my pocket, recorded the entire conversation. I might never get a chance to bother Rob Paulsen ever again in my life. So I'm going to record the entire conversation for prosperity's sake.
Instant episode,
That's exactly what it turned into. I'm going to talk about this on the podcast because I probably referenced this from the Wisconsin Comic Convention 2019. It was we did a live show there. We actually did a live show there.
Yeah.
But I met Rob Paulsen there. I did record and I have video of him talking hockey with me. On video.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty cool.
my final episode of the Airport Minute was Jacqueline Bisset leaving me a message saying that she couldn't appear on the show. So
that's funny.
That's three minutes of the show, of the entire series.
That's fantastic, actually. So we do have the reference point where we talk about all the mall rats, and then he's talking about any kids, he's talking about actual rats that are running around here. And then the next minute, we have him throwing and killing a rat. The next minute, which we do talk about in the next minute. But it's so ridiculous. Such a stupid joke to call back to mall rats. Yeah. Even though we just did 4 references to mall rats in the matter of 30 seconds, we really didn't need that joke there.
So I like to imagine he's throwing a copy of either Gotham High or one of Gabby Rivera's Americas of the Rat.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, I'll go with that one.
I mean, that's the only thing you can really use them for other than toilet paper.
Guarantee somebody reads it somewhere. Somebody does read it somewhere eventually.
People read the ingredients list on a think of Tabasco sauce. Of course they'd read it.
Hey, I will go with my favorite jokes and friends is that Joey Tribbiani always never read a book, but he always said he read something because he read the back of cereal boxes.
He has a point.
It's still one of my favorite jokes. It was a running gag for 6 years. That joke just kept coming up every time. You see him sitting here reading a cereal box for no reason whatsoever. It had nothing to do with the scene. It was just Erica that kept it going for years.
when I was the same way as a kid, I'd always do that when I had cereal for breakfast.
Fair enough. But it's different, though. Yeah. I'm talking about him just sitting there on the couch reading a cereal box. That's what I'm talking about.
History Science Theater had something cool like that as part of the invention exchange where they said kids like to read the back of cereal boxes, so they had the idea of putting full novels on the back of the cereal box.
That's a terrible idea, actually.
So they had stuff like with Lucky Charms, Gravity's Rainbow by Thomas Pynchon. Yeah.
So
One of my favorite references of that is Lex Luthor in Superman. He says some people can read War and Peace and come away thinking it's a simple adventure story, and others can read the ingredients on a chewing gum wrapper and unlock the secrets of the universe. While he's saying that, in the background, Otis is reading the ingredients to a wrapper of candy.
That's funny.
Is it? Oh god, that reminds me. It's completely really, but yeah, a website I used to go to called the Agony Booth did a recap for Wild Wild West. It's a movie that I like, but yeah. They have a screen cap of Loveless's Divided States of America, and the caption is simply Otisburg.
That's funny. Yeah. No, I hate that movie. I hate that movie so much. That was a waste of my time. I hate that movie. I love the song, hate the movie. I will jam out to that bop anytime it comes on Serious Sam, but I will never rewatch that movie again in my life.
I fucking loved it. I think thought Will Smith and Kevin Kline should have done more movies together.
I think because of when I saw it, I just hated it so much. So, okay, well, fast. Of course, we, Jason Lee, history with Viewisq. Obviously, Mallrats, I'm instantly referencing here. Mallrats, he also was in Chasing Amy as Banky Edwards, but he, by the way, won an Independent Spirit Award for Best Supporting Actor. Best Supporting Male. So there you go. Did not know that until like 30 seconds ago. He was in Dogma. He obviously was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And of course, here we are. And also in Jersey Girl, made a cameo in Jersey Girl. So that's cool.
Clerks 2.
Clerks 2, obviously, as Lance Downs, which we had so much fun with last season.
Thanks, pickle fucker.
Yeah, we had so much fun with that last season. Of course, Jay and Silent Bob reboot. I don't know if he's in Clerks 3 because most of the cast hasn't been announced for Clerks 3 yet, but I'm not going to lie. I won't be shocked if he's in Clerks 3.
Silent Bob, some pickle fucker gave us freets.
Go back to that last season. as always, I will say, what else do you want to reference from our friend Jason Lee? Kyle.
Well, because he's also known for My Name is Earl. My name is Earl. And just one he probably would like you to forget either a guy thing or Stealing Harvard. Of course. Yeah.
And of course, I'm Alvin and the Chipmunks, which he's in four movies of Alvin and the Chipmunks. I didn't realize there was four of them.
Oh, I thought there was five. My bad.
I'm looking at here. I have Alvin and Chipmunks, Alvin and Chipmunks the Squeakle, Alvin and Chipmunks Chipwrecked, and Alvin and Chipmunks the Road Chip.
Which, again, they dumped against Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Wow, that's really a really stupid thing to do. Going against Star Wars The Force Awakens. I didn't even know that movie came out because I saw Star Wars The Force Awakens like everyone else in the world. in the world did.
It kind of shows you just how much faith they had in it. Just like
it was Alvin and the Chipmunks. Yeah. Like, what did you expect?
No, it kind of shows you just how much faith the studio had in it. Sort of like how they dumped a Point Break, the remake, against Star Wars.
I know, but give me a break here. Like, You were going to throw your crap up against Star Wars when you know everyone's going to see Star Wars. Like, I'm just being honest here. Like,
well, they wanted to put it in a dump month without making it obvious they were putting it in a dump month.
Again, you put it up against one of the biggest movies ever. Against a movie everyone was anticipating. Yeah. And in my opinion, the best of that trilogy was The Force Awakens. So, like, you're and again, the number one film in the U.S. grossing still to this day. So... All right. Before we wrap things up, Jim, any other thoughts on this movie? We were talking about the beginning. Talk about the beginning. Any other thoughts on future minutes in this movie?
If I came up negative at the beginning, I did enjoy the movie. I wish more from Kevin Smith. I mean, I just feel bad when it gets. It's the same ground, and we go over it again and again. It's if anything, the positive thing is you could look at it like Rushmore. He's just looking at the same material again in a different manner as he's getting older. You know, people like Monet drew the same picture of the same cathedral 20 or 30 times, and it comes out different. And this is kind of like if you've ever seen the documentary, the 7-Up series, where they follow a bunch of people as they're 7, 14, 28, and they continue on into their 50s. this is kind of it. We're watching Jay and Silent Bob get older and older and older. And if they're getting, it's funny. It went out to this big, studio sized productions when you're watching the earlier series. And now this is feeling more like an indie thing that they shot on the fly, and they got, you see a lot of cameos, but it's all one-offs. Like when you get to, you're going to get to the Ben Affleck part, and it's just Ben Affleck you've got Ben Affleck for a day. He doesn't have to change his clothes. We're going to do it in a small room here. Take my kid. And we can use my kid in the film, and we'll shoot that part. So it feels more like an indie film. So I guess, in the positive sense here, Smith is getting back to his roots. This is, guerrilla indie shooting. So I think that's my favorite part of this movie.
I know it's joked about later. Oh, sorry, I was just trying to say. I know it's joked about later on that Kevin in the movie jokes about the fact that he had a heart attack, so he called in all of his friends to be in the movie. Yeah. That's exactly what happened here. He had a heart attack, and then he called in all of his friends to do a movie.
when we did Into the Night, John Landis had just gotten over the Twilight Zone trial. And he basically called in all of his friends to do a giant cameo movie. It didn't make a lot of money, but he had all of Jeff Goldblum was in it, and every director that you can think of, even people like Jim Henson showed up for cameos. David Bowie, just people to support Landis in his hour of need to make a movie. So I think this is kind of along that same lines. Although Smith hasn't flown helicopters into anybody, so that's a good positive. Here.
Well, that we know of.
Yeah, so far.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if it feels like he keeps retreading the old ground, is because it seems like either the fan base or the critics won't let him go out into new ground. It kind of feels like the whole thing with Doug Walker, the nostalgia critic, where he tried to end it and do something, and then the fan base just wouldn't let him.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just you don't want to see him do anything else, and I could imagine that he wants to, but every time he falls outside of this realm, it seems to have a lot of bad times for him.
I think it's also, it's almost like, I'm going to have fun. I'm going to do what I want. And he ended up touring with this movie. He toured. Yeah. He did a whole thing. But he's also playing to his audience. He's playing to the viewers' queue audience, the people that now, I'm one of these people that are members of the Kevin Smith Club and that want to watch him goof around and want to listen to his podcasts. And literally later on, and this is going out the thing, he references his podcasts, he references his other movies, he does all references that we're seeing in the theater. There are jokes that are over his head, they're Kyle's head, because I'm getting them from a podcast listener. So I'm getting the jokes, they're going over his head, but I'm laughing my ass off because I think it's funny. Like, I will talk about that later in the movie, but like, there's things like that go on in this movie, which I kind of appreciate. As if I wish I had the kind of money and time at his point of his life to do something like this, where he's just goofing around, joking around with his friends.
I kind of wish I had that filmmaking talent.
Yeah, seriously. Like, the fact that he's in the movie, he's in 90% of the movie, yet he's also directing the movie, which is even more impressive when you think about it. I know he's not saying much, but he's still in the scenes. Like,
and he manages to make a movie about himself, but the main character that he's playing is not himself. So.
But he makes fun of himself later as himself. Like, so it's so ridiculous.
The only thing, I can't remember if they did this, but I'm just gonna say the only thing missing would be a split screen of Bob beating Kevin.
They did that. Oh, they did that later in the movie. Oh, good. I have that scene later in the movie. In the backstage area.
So Silent Bob gets to beat himself, gets to beat Kevin Smith. Basically, we have Kevin Smith beating Kevin Smith. I think this is one of those things where if they shook hands, it would cause the end of the universe.
Yeah, it was one of the most bizarre moments I've ever seen in my life. I remember seeing the theater, like, what are we doing?
It would be like Southland Tales, only it didn't suck.
Yeah, this is the greatest actor meeting himself on screen since Schwarzenegger in Last Action Hero.
Yes. That's a great comparison.
Movie is fucking underrated.
Oh man, I do like that movie.
But to a lesser extent, they had a little thing that was an Easter egg on the original DVD for Rocky that had Rocky meeting Stallone, and Stallone basically giving Rocky the Oscar that they won for that.
Oh, there you go. That works. All right. Well, that being said, let's wrap things up here. Jim, this is where I give you the opportunity to plug wherever you want to plug, wherever you want to do. This is coming out in the summertime, so in about June. So plug away.
Well, right now, if you're listening to this in the summer of 2022, we are deep into one of my favorite Westerns. I think it's my top three. The 1985 film Silverado. All the Movies by Minutes hosts that I could get hold of. I think we got 26 different teams of hosts are taking apart the 1985 Lawrence Kasdan directed feature Silverado, 1 minute of screen time per episode. You can find that anywhere you're listening to, well, wherever you found this podcast, you could probably find us Silverado Minute or over at the big site, silveradominute.com. Join us. There's a lot of interesting takes on this great Western.
So I'm literally able to tell this story anywhere else. So during MMX at Home, we had a big at home festival, the home con for ourselves. Back in August, because of COVID and everything, we couldn't do the con we wanted to do, so we did it at home for the second year in a row. And when you reveal Silverado, I have never heard so many people so happy and celebrating that you're doing this movie. Like, there was so much like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this movie. Like, oh my God. It was absolutely hysterical to watch.
We opened up the sign up window for it, and we were originally going to do 2 weeks. Everybody was going to get 10 episodes, but we had so many people fill in that I shrunk it down to everybody gets 5 episodes. So it really filled up great, and I'm very glad that so many people could participate. And hopefully next
year
we'll
be having
a big one too. So
that's really, really impressive, actually. So I will say, of course, you can hear me every single Friday right after this show. Go listen to the Blake and Sal Show with Mark every Friday at all podcasting, all podcast platforms. Also, because it's the middle of June, we will be at Fan Expo Chicago. I think you see that. Fan Expo Chicago. The Fan Expo is July 7th through the 10th, 2022. We will definitely be there on Saturday. All depends on where Kevin's panel is and everything, what's going on with that. But we'll definitely be there on July 9th. I know for a fact I will be doing a live show myself there that weekend. So that's going to be my third Wizard World live panel. So that'll be a lot of fun. Sorry, with a roll, whatever, you know what I mean. My panel at it was a Royal Fan Expo, whatever, go with it. So go over there and make sure you get your tickets and join us there at Fan Expo Chicago. That being said, thank you, Jim, for coming on. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate it always if you take time out for us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
No problem. And all you listening, next week we will have Tom Stalp here from the PW Torch, one of my favorite movie nerds, coming on next week to discuss. And little hint, we already recorded that episode, and about 30 minutes of it, I don't say anything because it's just Kyle and Tom going back and forth about movies. It is a fantastic conversation. I wasn't even bothered half the episode. I'm just kind of sitting here listening to these two go back and forth. So go listen to that next week. Until then, we'll see you then. Thank you all for listening. I'm Blake.
I'm Kyle.
And you've been listening to Clerks A Minute Reboot. Have a good day, everybody.
Sustained. It sucked ass and balls.
Noin, smoking weed, doing coke, drinking beers, rolling baddies, smoking blunts, who smokes the blunts, rolling blunts and smoking.